Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good to have you all here and glad you got to know a few people, hopefully. And I'm Greg Meyer. And it's just a real pleasure to have all of you guys here. I mean, what a beautiful day, and what a beautiful place for us to gather. I'm just constantly thankful for that, and got kids doing some great artwork here. You guys can think about your favorite places in Minneapolis and draw pictures of those, too, as well as everything else you're thinking about. Well, anyway, if you're new to Jacob's Well, a couple things about us that might be a little bit different, maybe want to know is, one is, we don't go to church. We like try to be church. At least, like I say, we try to be that. That sort of means one is, we aren't about a place. We're more of a people. So yes, we do normally meet at Field Middle School, and that's where we're going to be next week. But we don't have a building, and we really don't want to have a building because we want it to be about the people. So that's a pretty important thing about us. And if it's good weather and it makes a lot of sense to be out at Minnehaha Falls, by golly, we're just going to plain do that. So that's a good thing. Another thing about Jacob's Well is that we care a lot more about people for who they are than for what they believe. And that doesn't mean that we don't think that beliefs are important, but I think we all just know that it's really easy to say or to think you believe things, but to actually have your life being driven by things that are totally different than that. And we just don't want to get into that game. So we just avoid playing in it. And so we all like to just engage with the real things of life and wrestle with them together and try to hold each other accountable and encourage and support that and not be about conformity, not being worrying about everybody getting everybody to believe the same thing at the same time. It just doesn't work that way. So that's an important thing for us as well. And we not only do that for adults, but that's really how we approach things for our kids as well through all the ages of kids. So that's a big thing about us. Also, if being casual is kind of an important thing for us, and a nice thing is you can wear your shorts and T-shirts, not just when we meet out at the falls, but you can do it every Sunday. In fact, I'm going to send a letter to the Minneapolis Park and Rec Board and tell them to get cup holders on these benches. I mean, it seems to be a major flaw in city planning, but anyway. And yeah, so that's an important thing. Basically, that's just kind of a general sketch of saying that Jacob's Well, we really try to be out of the box, and that's kind of something we've been talking about a lot of the weeks. And I know that's kind of a cool or trendy thing to say, we're trying to be out of the box, but we don't do it for those reasons. We do it because out of the box is where growth happens. As people, we are just way too good at building boxes and then reinforcing them with concrete so that we spend our lives in it. And I think we know that our lives and our society is full of a lot of boxes that, one, keep us from growing, like I said a little bit ago, but it also, they're just plain hurtful to a lot of other people. So it's an important thing for us to try to get out of that. And for me personally, then, in trying to lead a community, one of the people I pay a lot of attention to try to understand how we might break these boxes is Jesus. Because he really was the major league box breaker we've ever known. A lot of people think that Jesus came in order to give us religion. No, that's what people did, okay? Jesus didn't do it. Jesus came to give us life, right? And life is something you find when you get free of some of these boxes that kind of try to keep you from it. Another thing that Jesus talked about an awful lot was free. He came so that we could be free. Well, living in boxes sounds like imprisonment, right? I mean, free is when we at least get up high enough that we can peek over the side and throw one leg over and start living on the other side of those boxes and seeing a bigger and a better world. So he really does break a lot of boxes and show us a lot of possibilities of how we can live together. Last week, while we were kind of setting up for Brenda Caselius, the state commissioner of education, who's a Jacob's Well person, she's coming to share some of her box-breaking ideas and initiatives for education for us. We talked about some of how Jesus was doing that in the 7th chapter of Mark's Gospel. Mark being one of the Gospel writers, meaning he wrote a collection of stories and things that tell the story of Jesus' life. And in the 7th chapter, there's some great stories about it. And this week, while we wait for another Minneapolis box-breaker, Theodore Wirth, fortunately, he's been dead about 80 years, but we'll pull him back. for him, I want to look at the next chapter. So that was Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 8, there's another like amazing story that I think when we find out what's actually going on in the background of it, it starts helping us a lot understand maybe what this life outside of some of those two stiff boxes could look like. And in fact, if you look on the Sunday paper on the back, I think it's the top right, there's some leftovers, and there's some suggestions for reading from that chapter in Mark's gospel. But you're probably familiar with the story about Jesus feeding the 5,000. I mean, that's kind of a typical story a lot of people hear. Well, that was in the chapter before. That was two chapters before. That was Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 8, Jesus, again, has hordes of people surrounding him. And this time the number says it's 4,000 people. 4,000 people meaning 4,000 men. They didn't count women and children those days. Some things never change, or at least far too slow to change. So, well, we know lots and lots of people, right? Now, Jesus could see what was happening. He could see that there's a problem beginning. And he understood people. He understood how the world could work, and so he set up the problem so people could start discovering something new outside their boxes. So he simply turns to his followers and says, we got a lot of people here. They've been following us for like 3 days. I don't think they've got a lot of food left, and it's way too far for them to go home and grab a snack and come back. What do you think we should do? And his group of elite followers, we call them disciples, came back with a brilliant answer. I have no idea. I mean, there is no way anybody could feed all these people when we're out in the boonies the way we are. And, okay, it doesn't say this in the Bible, but I'm pretty sure Jesus rolled his eyes and shook his head. And then it does say, okay, got any bread, guys? And he said, well, yeah, you know, we got a couple of loaves here. Okay. Get the bread. And he gave thanks for it, according to Jewish customs. And he said, now pass it out to people. So they pass it out to people, which is just like he had done two chapters before, right? I mean, they should have seen this coming, but no. So they pass out before, and you know what happens. Everybody has plenty to eat. Then they go pick up the leftovers, and it's, the story tells us there's seven baskets of leftovers. That's actually important, okay? There's seven baskets of leftovers. And now, I don't know how that happened, what was going on there. A lot of people like to point at this miraculous feeding all these people and say that this is all about Jesus shock and awe, like how he could, look what Jesus can do kind of thing. Yeah, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I mean, if Jesus wanted to impress people, there are a lot of ways he could impress people. I personally would be thinking more Harry Potter, the Hogwarts dining room where a feast just suddenly appears on the tables in front of people, something less subtle than what happened with these disciples. But, Jesus wasn't trying to impress people. He was trying to wake people up. He was trying to get them out of their boxes. He was trying to let them see that they were in a little world that was bounded by scarcity and selfishness, and that is the world that they expected to see, so they kept finding it, but it wasn't the only world that existed. Instead, he was trying to open their eyes so they could see a different world, a much bigger world, full of enough, full of generosity, full of possibility, and full of hope, but they didn't get it. They didn't get it. So the next day, he's with his disciples again. This is just continuing on in the narrative in the Bible. And once again, the disciples are all worried about not having enough food. And Jesus, this time Jesus just loses it. He says, I can't take it, guys. Seriously now, do you not get this? You've got ears, you've got eyes, but have you heard nothing? Have you seen nothing? And they're all just looking at him like, what are you talking about? So Jesus, let me break this down for you guys, okay? A couple days ago, there were lots and lots of people, right? Yep. And we gave them not much bread. We shared it with everybody. And what happened? How much did we gather back? And they said, 12 baskets. Jesus said, right. He said, then yesterday, what did we do? We had lots and lots of people again. We gave thanks. We cared about these people. We gave thanks for this bread. And we shared this stuff that wasn't enough. And we passed it all out. And it was enough. And we gathered how many baskets back? And he said, well, Jesus, I guess it was seven, but never mind the but. We got it seven baskets back. Now, do you get it? Now, curiously, the Bible doesn't tell us whether they got it or not. I mean, it just ends with his question. Now, I'm going to give him credit. The fact that most of the gospel writers include these stories tells me that sooner or later they finally got it, right? But at the moment, I don't think they did. So my question is, do you get it? No, you may need a little help here, okay? There's some stuff that they knew that you don't know. And one is Jewish numerology, all right? So the number three in Judaism signifies, it's the God number. It's the divine. It's the intangibles. It's heaven, all right? And the number four is the number, the human number. It's the earth, the four corners of the earth. It's the tangibles. So when you combine three, the intangibles, the divine, the heavenly, with four, the earthly, the human, the intangibles, what do you have? You've got everything. You have more than enough. You have more than you could ever ask or imagine. And you can combine three and four to be seven, or you can multiply them and get 12. And Jesus is trying to say, didn't you get it? All right? We were in a situation we thought there wasn't enough, but we loved the people that were with us. We cared about them. We took what we had. We shared it with each other. We trusted each other. And we had more than we needed. And then what? We took those baskets. So we gathered 12 baskets, which is more than we started with. And then people took that and they fed others. They shared it with others. And they probably then would have more than they started with. And they took that and did it again and again. Don't you get it? We live in a world where there are no limits, where it is about possibility, where generosity and enough are the true truths of our world if we get out of our box and we see it. So Jesus, you know, really, this was a story not so much about a miracle. This was a story with a message. It was a story of a message that says that we can believe in what is possible and what isn't there yet. It's box breaking. It's telling us that the truth isn't what we see or what we don't see. The truth is what is possible and is full of hope.
Box for the city of Minneapolis, care of Greg Meyer.
UPS delivery. Yeah, okay. I wasn't expecting this, but all right. Thank you. Fun. A box. Wonder what's in the box that I've been given. Well, all that's been given, city of Minneapolis. Just a note. It says, to everyone, the message. People are getting their share already. You'd better get yours before it's all gone. Signed, us who know the way things work. Yeah, I think that's a box we all get handed. And a lot of us believe it and agree with it, and are thinking that maybe that's the world that we have. So here we are at Minnehaha Falls, okay? Did you realize that this location that we are in is a 12-basket leftover location? We miss it because it's been this way so long, and we have so many assumptions about it. There was a man born in 1863 named Theodore Wirth. He's born in Switzerland. He grew up with his parents, his dad, always hiking, enjoying, loving, seriously hardcore learning from those mountains and the valleys in Switzerland. He loved that. And he knew that was going to be his career. Like, how do we share public spaces with other people? He knew that as a child. And so he tracked them away early on, and he got a job working with parks and horticulture and stuff like that in Zurich, then in London, then in Paris. And about 1900, he decided to immigrate into the United States. I tell you, those immigrants are always trouble, you know. All he did was transform everything for the better for us. So he comes and he works in New York, he works in New Jersey, he works in Connecticut, all the time developing this new vision for what public parks could be. And then in 1906, he gets offered the job to be superintendent of parks in this little burgeoning city out in the Midwest called Minneapolis. And he takes it, and he comes here, and he changes parks around the world forever. So what did he do? He broke two established boxes that we have lived in with our parks for centuries in what he did. The first thing that he did, his first box-breaking concept was that parks were to be used. And we're all going like, yeah? Well, believe it or not, that was a new idea. I mean, for centuries, parks were to be appreciated, not used. Their primary value was beauty and aesthetic dignity. That's what the statement said. Second purpose was passive recreation. He had this crazy idea, and he really was a loner on it, that parks were to be used, that it was about active recreation, and they were to be playgrounds. And that notion rocked park departments around the world. I found it interesting. There is a woman named Yen Trin. She lives in Australia now. She's kind of one of the young gurus in the global park movement right now. She's kind of ahead of a movement called Tactical Urbanism. She did a TED Talk in 2015 in which she says one of her big eye-opening experiences when she was in Toronto, and she saw a sign in one of the parks that said, "Please walk on the grass." Okay. That was not a 21st century notion, and it did not appear in Toronto for the first time. Theodore Wirth had signs saying that here in Minneapolis before 1910. He not only did that, but he also tore down the fences that separated people from the green spaces so that people would go out and actually start using them. He had the city build his house and his offices in the corner of a city park, Lindale Farmstead. You're probably all familiar with it, because he said, "I want my vision of what these parks are supposed to do to be infected daily by having to see people use parks." I mean, that is pretty ground-shaking sort of stuff. That was the first one. The second major box that he broke for us that we are beneficiaries of today is that he had this silly idea about access for everyone. All right? Now, he did not want the land to belong just to the people who, you know, were elite and who could afford to get these prime spots, or just who happened to get there first. He realized he has this vision that we got to see what these spots are, and we need to claim them for all people, because the health of the city, the health of the people, depends on that. These belong to all of us. He expanded the park system here in Minneapolis threefold during his career until it reached 14% of the land area of our city, which is unknown of in other metropolitan areas. And it is no mistake that our chain of lakes, Minnehaha Creek, this park here, Minnehaha Falls, along the river, along Mississippi River, every time you have these beautiful shared spaces with a green space and a parkway before you can get to the private houses. It is not by accident that Minneapolis looks that way, because other cities do not look that way. It's because he had that vision early in the early parts of the 20th century that it could be that way. The Grand Rounds, 50 miles of bikeways and paths encircling our city, was not the result of some activism a couple of decades ago. That was his vision in the first two decades of the 20th century, that it should be that way, and the city should build itself around that kind of infrastructure. Because he did that, people came from around the world to see him and to see what was going on. He also had this conviction that there should be a playground within a quarter mile of every child in the city, and a recreation center within every half mile of every person in this city, every family within this city. And today, here's now in 2017, that's still true. 97% of our population lives within that kind of a parameter. And he wrote into the policies that he created, and I read this, that this should be true regardless of race or economic status. Not a lot of people thinking that way in 1920. But he was, and he brought our city along with it. There's more. This guy was a couple generations ahead of himself. People from around the world, park superintendents from around the world and throughout our nation came to study to see what he was doing. He was considered the dean, the mentor of park development around the world for decades. And his ability to see things differently reshaped the world and how we understood public places. Today, if we were to ask each other, what do you value most about Minneapolis? I'd be willing to bet that all of us would have our parks and our access to beautiful natural environments somewhere in the very top couple things of our list. I know it certainly is true for me, and one of the reasons I live in Minneapolis. And in fact, you probably saw it not too long ago. Minneapolis, by the Trust for Public Lands, voted or named Minneapolis the top city in the country for public lands, or for parks for the fifth year in a row. And now St. Paul, too, has been working hard to do the same thing, and they've been in the number two spot for the last 2 years, making Minneapolis-St. Paul first and second for parks in the entire nation. I mean, yeah, I mean, that is amazing. We kind of take it for granted. I mean, it's the way it is, right? No, it's because someone was uncomfortable with a box and decided to look to see what could be outside of it and make that vision happen. And he spent his life breaking down those boxes so that we could also see outside of them and we could enjoy it and benefit from all that. He knew that the world was enough. The problem isn't that there isn't enough. The problem is how we engage with the world around us and how we decide to trust each other and share it with each other and cooperate with each other and be in relationship with each other. He helped us realize this God-sized vision of how we could share the space that we inhabit. And that has made all the difference for us. Okay, so Jesus talked about this. Theodore Wirth was about it. What about you? What about you? What boxes are waiting for you to break them? You've got ears. You've got eyes. Can you not hear? Can you not see? I mean, we do. And this world is waiting for us to realize some of these boxes that need to go and to begin to reach out and discover a different world. There are people that are hurting because there are boxes that we are meant to break that we're not taking the time, the effort, and going through the trouble to do it. There are far too many boxes littering the landscape of our own lives and our society that are hurting people. They need to go down. Economic policies, the way we use and produce our energy, medicine and healthcare, how we see the people that are different from us and relate with them or that are new to our nation, how we see our jobs, our income, our homes, how we view our time and our priorities. It's boxes that we have around our relationships, our casual relationships with our neighbors and coworkers and schoolmates, and then these intimate relationships with our families and the people that we love. The world is waiting for us to have a new vision, see some new possibilities. You, each and every one of you, you can see things that I can't. You can probably see some things that no one else can. Don't let anyone convince you that you are only dreaming, that's your imagination. No, you maybe are seeing something that is really there and that all of us are just too stuck in our own worlds to be able to see it with you. So we need you to keep looking. We need you to try it, to test it, to learn from it, and probably most of all, to help us see what you see as well. Because that's something we've been called to do. It's something our world is waiting for us to do. You know, as a way to kind of wrap up that thinking and to be able to create that space that we can start seeing the stuff that is not what is but what could be, I invite you all just to take a moment and be quiet. Take that breath, nice deep breath. Shake those shoulders out a little bit. Wiggle your feet into the ground till they're nice and comfortable. If you've got a squirmy child with you, maybe pick them up and put them on your lap. Kids, maybe, you know, put your hand over your chest so you can feel your breath, or maybe your parents can help you find their own pulse on their wrist with your fingers. And just be still. We have to create space so that all the stuff that we are so busy with in our lives can start to melt away, and that cloud can dissipate, the fog can lift so we could see what might be there waiting for us. I invite you to listen. Listen quietly. We hear children, I hear birds, I hear the Minnehaha Falls. Theodore Wirth heard those falls and he knew what they were saying. Listen to your heart. Listen to your children. Listen to yourself. Listen to your partner. Listen to your neighbors. Listen to your coworkers and those people whose language you don't understand. Listen to those people that are annoying in your life and you wish they would just be quiet. Instead, listen. Listen to the city. Take that breath. Listen to the silence. Listen to the song.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.